Theme for the afternoon talk is the composition of a human being. As you will have noticed incidentally, that a parallel Dharma group has just started down the pathway there with beloved Stephen Fonda and Leela. So there is a group, perhaps 40, 45 people who are here for a few days and exploring the Dharma. Here, of course, the primary emphasis is much with the silence, and the difference is here there is more communication taking place, and it's primarily people who have had quite some years of contact and connection with the Dharma and with retreats. So you may have noticed that two or three or four or five people who were here, they have emigrated down there, and currently Sandhya, Iran and I are dealing with our feelings of abandonment. All right, let me talk about the theme a little bit. The composition of the human being, of course, can be addressed and explored in a variety of ways. And the teachings of the Buddha took a rather practical step. Obviously, the teachings are a very direct way to really get to know ourselves. But also in these teachings, also equally, I have to add, to get to know the other as well. It's not only know thyself, as we will have heard in the classical Greek tradition, but it also includes know the other as well. In looking at the composition of a human being and the ways that we can address that or touch upon that, say, well, what is it that makes me up? What is it to be human? What stands out as I give attention to my being? And that willingness to take that interest invites a tremendous exploration. And the initial and perhaps the first thing that stands out is, here is a body. And this emergence of the physical formation, the initial thing to remember and to be clear about, we did not ask to be born. We weren't hanging out there in space somewhere, and we said, well, I think I'll descend onto this earth and I'll land with these parents or whatever. In fact, many of us had said, might have said, anybody but these parents. But some are okay, have a good connection. Anyway, let's see. I could go on here, all right. Okay, single mum and all that. So there's a situation where I did not choose the gender, I did not choose the colour of the skin, I did not choose its strengths and its weaknesses. So there, from the past, and we're talking a very long distant past here, of an evolutionary movement of change and becoming, and in the whole dynamic of this extraordinary flow of existence, you and I, at this time, we find here we are in this composition, in this formation of this appearance of the body. And it has a long historical process, and of course our beloved scientists and evolutionists, botanists have looked at all of this process that's gone on and said, this is where we are. But there's not only the history of the past there. And as we see, we enter into this world not just physically, but also in our arising, also we have other aspects of the inner condition. And each one of those is mutually dependent, mutually supported, interrelated. So the composite of the human being, she, he, you, me, consists of the physical, for sure. It consists of feelings, and we are as much human feelings as we are anything else. It consists of perceptions, that the inner life, it can move, and in that movement, initially, of course, with the eyes and ears, there's a perception. Essentially, I have the capacity to recognize, that's the perception, of what's taking place. I see, I hear, I smell, I taste, I touch, and also with the inner life. There is the perceptions of the past, which we call memory. There's a perception about the future, which we can think or speculate about. And there are these inner perceptions about what I am and who I am. So body, feelings, and perceptions contribute, along with two other factors, the composition of the human being. And it's a dynamic. And in the dynamic that takes place, there is also the formations of the states of mind. And all of that, the formations of the states of mind, thoughts, of course, perceptions, the capacity to recognize what's going on in and out, the feelings and the body, this is the composition of a human being, and it depends on consciousness. As a human being, one has the capacity to be conscious of what is going on. Conscious of the inner life, conscious of the outer life, and consciousness is the element in the dynamic of the human being which reveals. But to be conscious, to reveal, you are here. If I wasn't conscious, I was fast asleep. The moment I have no clue what was going on. Sometimes we have no clue when we're awake. That's another story. So consciousness, formations, thoughts, and movements of the mind, feelings, perceptions, and the body makes us up. This is what we're about. Why it's important just to make the short distinguishing features in the makeup of the human being. Because in the dynamic of that, touched upon a day or two, there's a sense of I, there's a sense of me, there's a sense, this is me, this is who I am. I am a human being, I am body, feelings, etc. This makes me up. And I look around and others are made up too. And what's quite remarkable in a way, that just at the physical level, how similar we are. Everybody that I have met, and I've been on this earth long enough, their eyes, including my own, are above their nose. I have no idea why they should be, but they are. And the mouth is below the nose. I don't see any reason why, you know, it couldn't be somewhere else on the side of the head or somewhere, but no, it's here. And the ears could be anywhere. I mean, they could be sticking out of the front of the head. It probably would be better. But they're stuck on the side of the head. And every human being on this earth has the same features there. But the capacity of the perception to recognize can see just enough differences, and they're quite small, aren't they? I mean, like, not centimeters would be to exaggerate, and they're tiny little differences. Say, oh, I know who you are, I know who you are. So these little differences which kind of make us up. Sometimes, of course, we meet people, we have no idea who they are. They might know us and we can't remember them. It's the memory thing that goes on. And sometimes in our relationship with other people, we wish we couldn't remember them. And sometimes people come up to us, they come up to me and go, God, you're so old, etc., etc. You know, perhaps get the idea I'm walking around with a shovel digging my grave, etc. So all these perceptions and views take place. And like my mother, gone from this world, and she was just a week or two before her 95th birthday. And just before when I had seen her, she said to me, you know, I look at myself in the mirror, but inside I'm still a 25-year-old young woman. But the outside, you know, God, poor old lady. She said, I don't feel like that inside. And when she came to the end of her life, she in the evening time was talking about my sister, about going to the cinema next week, and talking about making a cake in the home for the elderly, as it's called, that some of us will be joining soon. And I didn't look at you two, very good. or whatever. She said, I want to make a cake, my birthday is coming up. And then 8 o'clock in the morning, she asked one of the staff people to come in and said, would you make me a cup of tea, dear? Would you make me a cup of tea? And then just as the staff person was going out of her room to make a cup of tea, my mum said, oh, I'm ready to die. And the staff person said, oh, Peggy, that's her name. Come on, Peggy. Staff person went out, put the kettle on, made the cup of tea, came back, my mum had gone. Sometimes you think, wow, yeah, how blessed some people are just to make that kind of transition. Mm-hmm. But some of us, like me, or whatever, ex-monk, you know, I do not want to die in my sleep. Blimey, I haven't done all this practice to die in my sleep. I want to die, I want to be awake. You want to be with the last breath that goes out of the body. I'll be furious if I die asleep. So sometimes we look at the relationship to the body. This relationship to the body is obviously extraordinarily important. I may, in terms of, as they say these days, nurture the body, give support. And that relationship to the giving of support to the body in all the variety of ways gives life, helps with the natural flows of the body, and also can be a genuine agent and contribution to healing. I'm talking about diet and exercise, and lovely environments and happiness, and meditation processes, and much, much else can really give support. But as a human being, I cannot, even with the best wisdom and the best skill, I cannot protect in any absolute way from the movement of history. I don't know, in the physical terms, or the biological terms, and none of us can really know what I'm bringing in with this. The body doesn't come in without its history. And with the history, as one good nurse was telling me, she said, I've been working with people my life, 30, 35 years or so, and she said, everybody that I've met in their physical makeup has weak places. There are weak spots in the physical makeup. And sometimes you and I can't know and identify what that weak spot is. All we can do as loving and respectful, caring human beings in relationship to the physical, to take as much care as we can, to use the varieties of wisdom which is around, and at least know in our heart and in our being that the relationship to the body is one of mindfulness, receptivity, skillfulness in our connection with that, and connection with the way the environment, what we drink, what we eat, our exercise, our posture, our relationship to others and so forth, give support to the welfare of the body. Yet being quite clear, change is going on, moment to moment, day to day, year to year, clearly. And as my mum and the others will say, even though the physical is changing, sometimes in the inner life, it doesn't seem to age. We just feel like we were. And in the looking, sometimes in the mirror, and I have to say, just a small reminder here, that the beginning of the day is positively the worst time of the day to look in the mirror. Mirrors are to be avoided at all costs. So sometimes we look in the mirror. So there is the perception, we look in the mirror there. And how easy it is, the perception, due to the influence of the tendency, may land on particulars of what is seen there. And sometimes what is seen can generate a reaction. And we say to ourselves, oh, I don't like this about myself, and I don't like this aspect of myself, and I don't like these lines, and this shape, and this size, and this, that, and the other. And that view and the repetition of the view, it builds up, and it is a building, it's another painful composition called samkara in the tradition. It builds up a picture of the body. And sometimes that picture of the body is one which in the picture, in the image of it, is negative. There is a reaction against. I don't like myself because. And that can be in the general or in the particular. And then the thought then arises with it, oh God, if you know, maybe I should have some cosmetic surgery, and maybe I, why was I born like this? And the angst, the agitation keeps arising in the view. And I, having you know, plenty of some, more in America, I must say, who have had cosmetic surgery there. And some will say, Christopher, it was the really best thing I did. You know, hear this, you know, fairly regularly. But one may change the object. One may say, oh, I'm glad I had this nose job, whatever it is. And all the other jobs, I won't mention them. One's a bit bigger, one's a bit small. Anyway, so I also look in the mirror. So sometimes in the perception which takes place, this is important, one might change the object, the physical object, whatever it might be. And one may say, I'm glad I spent all this money on this, to do this. But it will not fundamentally make a great change, because the perception will go somewhere else, with some other object. It might be physical or somewhere else, which one is not happy with. So sometimes we have the idea, life is trying to fix every object to make it okay for my perception. Understand? Life becomes an endeavor. If I make this object good, I've just got the physical as an example, but if I can get this right, my perception, then I'll be fine. Good luck. Simple. Good luck. And we often, in the imagination, which is a composition born out of a human being, live so much in the picture of the object that I want, and in that picture of the object of that I want, I might, so to speak, get what I want. Money, you know, relationship, job, travel, spiritual experiences, or whatever it might, I might get what I want. But that which I want, no matter what it is changing. That which I want, and which I may have put a lot of effort from the perception, with the picture and the image that goes with it, that which I want is undergoing change. And so sometimes what I really wanted and I got has now changed. And guess what? I don't want. I've gone from wanting, I'm not only talking about relationships, there are other things in life. I go from
not in Israel.
Thank you, that's the reminder. And it's a little easier in Europe because we can get away from father. But here, you know, farther away, but here you're a little bit, you know, compact. It's another kind of composition. So sometimes I've got what I want, and it's just who or what that I want. But that which I have and have secured, she or he or it, job, you know, circumstances, health, whatever it might be, this is undergoing change. But if I have got a picture image of the past and I'm holding to this picture image, I've got what I want, but what I've got is now changing, I won't have the capacity to be with the living present because I'm carrying the picture from the old. Whoa. It's a hard way of living in the past. I've said a few times in Britain, the country prefers living in the past to in the present. Look around the place. So sometimes when we look, to be with the rhythm and flow of life, I need to be with the changes. I have to be, because the changes will not stop. You are changing, I am changing. The modifications of life, the compositions of life are changing. And if I don't move with the change, I'm in trouble. I'm in serious trouble, because there's no peace of mind. There's no contentment. I'm living in my images. I'm living in the illusions. I'm living in the false. I'm living in the history. And it's quite something for a human being to be kind of committed, and really committed to the movement of life, and really willing to know ourselves in this and to get to know the other. Sometimes, in this mystery of the inner life, body, feelings, perceptions, thoughts, mental formations, intentions and so forth, and consciousness, sometimes in the mystery of all of that, or in the dynamic of all of that, sometimes we miss the signals from the other. That's why I say, it's know thyself and know the other. And there are people who are close to us, and sometimes she or he or they, in their composition, something, to use the Dharma language, bears fruit. It's called bearing fruit from the past. So in other words, there's been something's going on inside the person. We haven't sensed it in intuition or in perception, or perhaps we haven't listened, or perhaps we have taken the other person for granted, whatever it might be. So there's a kind of laziness inside of us. He or she is putting out some signals to us. It might just be some withdrawal. It might be the person wanting some change, needing some attention, have a more adventurous life. I mean, millions of one things. And we haven't listened. And when we don't listen and we don't connect, the inner life of that person is still moving, it's still active, sometimes more strongly than we realize. And then one day we come home and half the furniture's gone. And there's just a little message on the kitchen table. Thank you, gone off to become a Buddhist nun in Thailand or wherever it might be, whatever. So our listening to the composition of the human being is to listen there, to really pick up early what the signals are and to be able to ask sensitively and respectfully, what is it that we can connect with and listen to? Two good friends, in this case in Germany, speaking to one of you today about this, been in a relationship, and about 4 or 5 years went by and I hadn't seen either the wife or the husband, and turned up on the retreat. And they were going through a difficult time. Yes, I know, what's new? And in going through the difficult period, they came to an agreement. And the agreement was, every Wednesday evening, the two would sit down together and discuss their relationship together over the last week. Over the last week. Without making any reference to before the last week. Because it's a minefield when we start projecting, speculating, deciding how things were in the past. And when we do that, we end up with the absolutes, usually starting off with the accusing finger, either you never or you always. This is the equivalent of firing a bazooka rocket into the heart of somebody. So they knew that, so they just kept to a week in which the initial... In the Sanskrit language, it's part of the teaching in Sanskrit in the Indian tradition, one starts off able to express what one appreciates. Because one feels, when we feel appreciated, we feel loved. So what they would just touch upon the acts of appreciation from one to the other. And then, where there was some difficulty, either through what the person did or didn't do, it's nearly always one or the other, that was touched upon and the listener said nothing. Didn't run into a defensive position or attack back, just listened. And then the roles were reversed. And then at the end, it only take half an hour to an hour, and then they discuss, how can we meet each other in those times and moments where we missed each other, ships passing in the night situation. How can we meet each other? They did this every week for 11 years. And they're still together, and they must be 25, 28 years. And I asked her, how is the time now? She said, I still have a really great relationship with this man. And sometimes it just takes, as we are doing here, a small form, it's a simple form, I wrote about it in one of my books, a small form to help, as we are doing here, keeping up to date with each other. It's dangerous territory, speculating or viewing or having a hard view and opinion about what happened in the past. It's destructive, actually, with the negative. So this perception of body, feelings, perceptions, thoughts, intentions, consciousness, as the makeup of the human being. Sometimes, in getting to know ourselves, there is a feeling of the I. Well, it's all important, sorry. Anyway, there's the feeling of the I, the feeling of the sense of I. And like Krishna, the Buddha didn't say this, but Krishna, who I loved a bit, he said in the Gita, to get the sense of the common of human beings, like the eyes above the nose, he said, the I, or the self, no big S, none of this Western stuff, the ordinary self, nothing special, the I, or the self, little self, of one, is the self of all. Understand? Self of one is the self of all. The feeling of I, that little extraordinary little contact, that little spark, that little sense of I, is common to all. The feeling of you sitting there listening to this, and the feeling of myself being here and the feeling of myself here, that feeling, sense, contact, sensation, call it what we like, is common to all, regardless of culture and history and environment and roles and identity. When we kind of strip all of that away, whoa, we have so much in common. We have as much in common as the wave has with the ocean in terms of the water. We are that close. Boy, do we forget it. Do we forget that? When we look there in the makeup, the movement of the inner life, inwardly, to get to know ourselves, where does the sense of I, this sense of I, where does it land? Does it land more often in one place than the other? And this also generates some of the feelings, which is fair enough, of differences between us. So one person may ask herself, himself, we ask, does my attention with the eye tend to go more often to the body? When it does, in that movement of the attention towards the physical, what is the response from the attention going to the physical which I notice the most? It may be for some a feeling of well-being, appreciation, blessings for good health, sense and a knowing of taking care of the body and giving the support to the body. And the general response is that, and feeling essentially okay as a human being in terms of the physical. We just feel okay about ourselves, and we feel okay. If we're looking in the small mirror, and if you are unfortunate enough to own a full-length mirror there, which you could always put on eBay, you look in there and then you say, okay, this is how it is. This is the body, naked. This is just how it is, and you find it fine. And one's okay with it. But as we know, far too often, the relationship to the body is not calm, clear, and appreciative of this extraordinary event of organic life. It's And with that there, the image, the picture, because this doesn't cause it, the image and the picture arises, generates a picture, and we get enchanted or trapped, shall we say, caught up in the picture. And then comes the negativity, the self-hate, the blame, the fears about the future, what I did wrong, that's why I'm like I am now. And all of that composition manifests in association with the body. Liberation is to liberate ourselves from those painful picture stories that we've made up about the body. And a contribution towards that, in a very real way, is our meditations. Our meditations highlight and emphasize not the image, but the fact. Experience the body as breath coming in and going out, as vibrations, as sensations, as DNA, as organic life, as biology, as a manifestation of evolution, as an expression of nature, to go right to the body and experience it directly as it actually is, which is a fact. It is an aspect of evolution. It is in the process of change and becoming. It is made up of elements. It is organic. It does have DNA. It is a cellular expression. It's a fact. It's not made up by human beings. It's not a projection. It is an actuality. Can I be so close and close enough to this formation of the nature with the appreciation, free from the projections on it, free from the fears and anxieties that might go with it? Not because I've detached myself from the body, which is not in these teachings, but actually it's the reverse. I've actually got so close that I've moved through my projections and layers on it, and I'm intimately connected. I see this as it is. It is called life. It's called nature. It's called elements or whatever. And that's what it is. And that closeness to it will generate the love, the care, the support for, and also the sense of wonder about it. Just the little senses. I remember when I was a monk in the cave, and I don't recommend this, by the way, etc. So I was on this island in the Gulf of Siam, and some nights during the best part of the year, I think 9 months or so, there, I would go out in the night. This is essentially to watch sensations. And lie down wherever I was, just lie down and keep completely still, look up at the night sky, feeling the extraordinariness, as we can sometimes, of course, of this little instrument being able to view out there in the universe. I mean, that's magic. But this little thing here, which you don't want to even touch, it's so precious, looks up there, and while looking up there, lying down in the darkness or in a bit of moonlight, and the watching of the sensations was because there were snakes around, and spiders around, and scorpions around, and some mad trust that if I just chilled out, relaxed, stayed really still, everything would be okay. There's no guarantee, but it must have been because we can talk. So there's the beauty there of the relationship to the night sky. And then there's the lying there and all the uncertainty that could be going on around there. And it's just a kind of practice of just, you know, trust. I'm not recommending it, but just trusting or letting go. And the important thing of all of this, and one of the strong reminders here, this formation called the body, and all of that, because, as has been spoken this afternoon with you, it can be looked at. Here is the body. this body is composed of, etc. It can be looked at. That which can be looked at is not me, is not myself, is not who I am. It can be looked at. I mean, if it was me and myself, etc. When one goes to the toilet in the morning, there could be a crisis. My God, I'm losing part of myself. It's going down that hole. Whatever. I cut my hair. Less to cut these days, it's thinning out. Or cut my fingernails. If this is me and myself, then I'm giving something of myself, I'm throwing something of myself away. But we don't have such worries, or maybe a bit. So the capacity of consciousness to look at something, and in that sense note, that which is looked at is not me, not myself. It's, in this case, just the elements. And there hasn't been in that any withdrawal. I'm not trying to cut myself from life, I'm just trying to see it without all the picture stories, without all the negativities and all that which loads on top. But the same principle applies elsewhere as well. The very fact that you and I can talk about our emotions, and you will come to us and you will see inside yourself, oh God, I've got so many feelings that are going on. And there's so many thoughts which are arising. The very fact that the consciousness can reveal and show this is what's going on, it's an object of interest. Again, it's not a withdrawal, it's learning to see this is the composition and these feelings and thoughts are showing themselves. In the meditations, there are situations in life, like the one I'm speaking about, where it's intended to give a contribution to a direct knowledge about things. Knowledge of body feelings, perceptions, etc. Knowledge of what the body is made up of. Receiving knowledge to be applied for our meditations, methods and techniques. Knowledge of teachings. So all of that is the application so that we understand what it is to be a human in life and our relationship to it. That's the whole teaching to wake us up, to liberate us, to liberate love and wisdom into life. But sometimes, it's an aspect of the teaching, though there is direct knowledge of, sometimes when it comes to, so to speak, self and other, I may not have the knowledge or the experience of another human being's life. I may have some empathy, I may feel quite close to, but I may not know all of her or his background. I just don't know there. And a rather graphic family example of this took place, and I was just speaking to a dad a few moments ago about it. My grandson, who is 15, 16 years of age, and my daughter has four kids, and, three fathers, four kids. She's adventurous, bless her. And Anglo-Caribbean. She long since gave up on white guys, I have to say. And the young man, really lovely young guy, came out of school, was picked on by a gang. And the guy, kind of the leader of the gang, had only been in the school for 2 weeks. So it's not like there was some history here. And had been expelled, thrown out of the previous school, was now in this, and this school had accepted him. And whatever reason, took some violent dislike to my grandson. And just outside the school, the three of them jumped on him, threw him on the ground, kicked him, stamped on his head on the ground, kicked him in the eye. This is a serious attack. Dislocated the eye socket, the eyeball, from the muscle in the socket. You know, really a savage attack. My daughter, Nishona, was going to the school ready because the boy was concerned about being attacked, my grandson. And he was with his girlfriend. Of course, she was absolutely shocked by all this that was going on. The boy was rushed to hospital, and the ambulance driver said to my daughter, if they had stamped on his head when he was on concrete, he'd either be dead now or in a coma. But it occurred when he was on grass, and the grass kind of saved him. The outcome of all of that is a long story, of course. The dislocation of the muscle from the eye socket and the eyeball, and she rang me. I went straight up to North London where they live, and then there was the operation. The point that I'm coming to in all of this, how easy it is, the self called grandson, the self called the grandfather, the self called the mother, understandably, but how easy it is to really get angry and really upset. How could somebody inflict such violence on this young, on the son, on the grandson? How can somebody, and get really, really, really angry? We don't know the boy, the teenager. My grandson doesn't know him actually either. So in Dharma teaching here, if in my reactivity I'm just attacking him or attacking the gang or sometimes blaming my son, you know, grandson, or he must have said something, he must have provoked it or whatever, get into the self-other attack and blame, I can't see beyond my reaction. I can't understand what happened. Because I've just decided to attack and blame there. But if that doesn't enter into the picture, the hostile image and blame, the first question, as my daughter and I were discussing, the first question arose, what on earth is going in the home of that violent young man who can come out and inflict such brutal violence on somebody else? What is the background? He wasn't born like that. What's the background that brings that about? And that can give some opportunity to try not only to understand without getting raged or living in fear, but try to understand the dynamic of some other human being's composition while taking appropriate steps. Speaking with the police, the police called the teenager in because the parents came in, the lawyer came in, sat in the police station in the interview room, and to every question that the police detective asked the young man, no comment, no comment, no comment, no comment. And that's where it is. And then they then beat up my grandson's best friend. So these situations in life, our anger and our reactivity on the situation, that means the view of that self and myself, obstructs the opportunity to look at the dynamic, which we may, in this case, infer. Everybody know the word infer? To interpret. The interpretation is there is some dynamic going on in that young man and probably in that household of violence. It's built up and then the rage comes out. And the understanding of each other sometimes is to look, so to speak, or sense a little bit further afield than just the immediate. Because sometimes we just react without knowing anything of the history, whatever that might be about. And still taking the necessary steps and so forth. God, time's flying. Give me a couple of minutes. In the looking at ourselves here, as I mentioned just briefly, when I look at myself, does one of these five compositions, or aggregates, means compositions, stand out a little bit more or a lot more than the others? In other words, do I tend to go to the body a lot? Do I tend to go to feelings and emotions a lot? Do I think of myself as a feeling person or as an emotional person? Do I tend to go to the perceptions? Always looking and the mind involved in yesterday, today, what's going on, and just preoccupied through the senses in some way. Do I tend to think a lot? Am I a thinker and spend a lot of time in thought? And with consciousness, of which the various names, you know, do I get preoccupied with mindfulness all the time, being conscious all the time, being attentive all the time? If I grab that, the self grabs hold of that, like with anything else, if it grabs the consciousness, then we'll be criticizing ourselves. I should be more mindful. I should be more clear. I shouldn't react. So all this is grabbing of consciousness. Or I'm the mantra here. I am thinking too much. Thinking. And unfortunately, in that world, sometimes I notice, not here in Israel, sometimes I notice that there's a bit of a hierarchy going on. The feeling types are beginning to feel superior to the thinking types. And so one might be in one's emotions and feelings, oh gosh, occasionally, he's really in touch with his or her emotions and feelings. I said, well, that's wonderful. God, he's so in touch with their feelings and emotions. But if somebody else is really in touch with their thoughts, oh, that poor man, just lives in his thoughts. I mean, just really, you know, just not going very deep. He's just in his head all the time, etc. And so one ends up with a superiority complex in our circles, and the other one ends up with an inferiority complex because they spend too much time. I have to say a little bit with regard to this. One is, we're always talking about diversity. So diversity requires those who spend a lot of time in their head. And I am one of those who speaks a lot of appreciation for our academics and our scholars and our people who do a lot of research and provide us with a lot of good knowledge and good insights. And they have got genuinely good minds. They may not have a clue how to say, I love you. They wouldn't know how to hug and touch. And one scientist said to me in Europe just a few months ago, he said, Christopher, I have to travel quite a lot. I'm a scientist, I'm an academic. And of course, I meet various people around the world, etc., these conferences there, and some of them I've seen before. And then when we have some contact together, oh, hello, hi, I've got to see you again, and shake hands, etc. He said, but when I've been on retreat, he said, I've started doing retreats there, and then I come back and do another retreat. And I, the whole retreat's been in silence. I haven't said a word there. And then on the next retreat, some of those people who were on my previous retreat turn up on the retreat. And it's like a long-lost brother or sister. God, it's wonderful to see you. How are you? And they're hugging each other. Never spoken to each other. So sometimes in the retreat world, you know, something kind of beautiful, of closeness and hug. But still, we need our caring, thoughtful academics. We need our professors. We need our scholars. We have beneficiary here from it, from the texts, from all that translation work and all of that dedication. They say, hey, let's pay respect to the diversity of human compositions and therefore have respect for people who give care to whatever. And of course, in that, to know ourselves, is it? If I spend too much time with the body, especially with some worry or anxiety, could it be that I am neglecting the other aspects, the feeling life there, the perceptions of seeing and hearing and smelling, the view of life of consciousness and mindfulness, of the value of healthy and ethical thought? Do I need to give more attention to that to help balance the relationship with the body? That principle, if I'm too much in my emotions and I'm constantly in the storm of emotion, let me give more attention to the physical, to the perception, to the thought, all the way through. And then finally, the compositions and the formations of the human being and the very profound spiritual consciousness, religious experiences that we can have access to, a huge variety of wonderful experiences, and also a big variety of very difficult and painful, challenging experiences of heart, mind, and body and consciousness. Our capacity, without withdrawing, we have to be mindful not to pull back, a little stepping back, but not a big pulling back because it cuts us off, in which the life of the human being, the compositions of the human being, is understood, that means the wisdom, from a much bigger perspective. There is life, there is human being, there is the stories of life, there is our togetherness, there is all the uncertainty and changes that are going on. There are the ranges of challenging and wonderful, extraordinary experiences of a human being, but there's also the opportunity from a truly awakened place, a truly liberated way of being, which this rather small world, with rather a short life to it, there, has, as it were, a finiteness to it, there, but we have the capacity to embrace it all, to have a sense, we might say, of the eternal, a deep sense of that which can accommodate all of this. And if we can really realize that, we have this small world in a perspective. We are not exaggerating our small, valuable day-to-day life because we have another sense which is bigger, and that embraces all of this. And this liberation or this awakening means that we can move easily through life and death. Thank you. Let's have a quiet minute together, shall we? teachings explore the composition of a human being. May all beings live with mindfulness and awareness of life. May all beings have the capacity to embrace all events. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening.